Hello and welcome to the BOAG World Show, the longest running web design podcast where we look at user experience design, conversion optimization and working in the web. On this show, we're going to look at the best AI tools for UX productivity, Baymod's amazing Figma plugin, and how I have finally accepted that SEO can be a force for good. My name is Paul Boag. That last one, really, that was hard. That was hard to say, that last one. My name is Paul Boag, and joining me as always is Marcus Linton. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
Grumpy. That's a surprise.
Normal.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Why are you grumpy today, Paul?
Tomorrow, I was supposed to be getting fiber to the premises. So I was going to go from 56 down, something like that, to 500 down, but they haven't laid it properly, so it's not going to happen, and I'm probably going to have to wait till after Christmas now.
I was going to say, well, like, ever. That's it. You missed your chance. Never mind. Hey.
Well, it all got complicated because we've got a tiny bit of private drive just outside of our house, which they had permission to dig up, but they didn't. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've only got about 50 meg.
Does that not annoy you these days? I have to do a lot of video stuff. For some reason, video is now a thing in my life, and uploading video takes forever.
Yeah, so. I guess big things. But yeah, you have to just remember back to the days of noisy dial-up.
Yeah. Also, there's been a whole performance. You don't need to know all this, neither does the listener, but I got missold by BT Broadband, right? So I had to go through a whole thing to get out of my contract with them. And their internet is shit. Never use BT Broadband. So I've had a disastrous experience with them. So I'm really desperate to get away, and I can't.
Missold. But you'd think that a tech guru like yourself would be able to see through anything like that.
Well, they lied to me.
Did they? They told you lies. You are going to get X, and they gave you Y.
Yeah, basically. They said as soon as fiber to the premises was available in my area from any provider, they would be able to provide it as well. And that was not true. So there you go.
Oh, you had that in writing, I assume.
No, it was on a call, and they record calls these days, don't they? So they had to go back and listen to the call, and it was on that. So,
well,
yay!
Never.
Who knew that being recorded by a company could be a good thing? But it really was. So, that was good news.
Yeah, but as it turns out, you can't have it anyway.
No, so the whole exercise is an enormous waste of my time. There you go.
I did my notes yesterday for the show, and I've realised that I've just got an intro. Find something witty to say. But I haven't.
Well, there you go.
I've said it. That's my witty thing to say.
Brilliant. So I want to know, are you on Blue Sky yet? Get with the kids.
Well, looked at it, right? And I don't really look at Twitter very much. I certainly don't post anything on Twitter.
Well, no one would risk doing that.
Well, yeah, but I think the last time I sort of actually did an interaction on Twitter was when this show started. It was quite recent, I suppose.
I thought you meant the first time in 2005. Twitter wasn't even there.
It's been a while. It's been a while. Twitter was 2007, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I might have retweeted something then. Re-exed. I don't know. How would you say it these days?
I don't care.
Anyway, but I do read it. I still got it on my phone, and I still get sort of things pop up, and it just makes my blood boil.
I know.
It's like, it's the place where the lowest of the low seem to hang out. And I noticed this Blue Sky thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, what's that? And I haven't done anything about it because I don't know if I'd use it. I have often said, even though I don't really do it or maybe even necessarily believe it, but I've often said that if you remove yourself from the argument, that's kind of as bad as being on the shit side of the argument, if you like. So if I should just delete X off my phone. I have no need for it whatsoever. I don't.
That I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't do it. And it's because I think I've got this kind of like nagging thing, you know, the old sort of, you know, if good men do nothing, evil prosper and all that kind of stuff. It's like you need to be in there sort of But no. Tell me, Paul. Tell me about Blue Sky. It's like it sounds great. It's like blue and it's got sky.
Yeah. So it's what makes if you go into it and you use it, you think, well, this is just like Twitter used to be, right? The interface is very Twitter-like from the old days, and it's very, very simple and very straightforward. It was built by, I think, an ex-Twitter employee when Elon decided to make everybody work 120-hour weeks or whatever it was. Yeah. So you think, well, surely it's just going to end up with the same problem given time. At the moment, it's lovely. It's all the kind of early adopter people like Twitter used to be, and it's all very fun and friendly and lovely. But it's actually different from Twitter or Threads or, you know, these kinds of things, because it's a decentralized platform. So it's more like Mastodon, but it's better designed than Mastodon. So it basically, what that means in practice, the comparison I've heard used is a bit like email. Right. Email's like a protocol, a language, right? And then various email clients have been built on top of that, like Hotmail and Gmail and, you know, whatever else. Now, with something like X, it's trying to be both the software, the Gmail level, and the email level. It's doing both bits. While Blue Sky has separated out the two. So let's say Blue Sky's algorithm turned evil and started doing all the link-baity and clickbaity stuff that's being pushed to you via X. Well, that's okay. You can still stay using the underlying platform and just get a different algorithm that is more friendly and is more like you want it to be. So, it basically has got a much longer life to it, I think, than Twitter or Thread or stuff like that, in terms of before it turns into a cesspit, basically. You can kind of narrow down how you view this fire hose of stuff that's being pushed at you. Not that you know any of that from using it now. You just sign up like a normal app, but it's what's under the hood that counts.
I should do it, and I also should delete X, because I have nothing other than... Basically, it's there to make me angry.
Yeah.
That's all it does.
I think I've deleted the app, but I do still post to it via Buffer and various other things. I post articles and stuff to it. I don't know why I bother, really. It's a psychological thing, because on X, I've got something like 46,000 followers or something like that. I can't remember the exact number, but it's a big number compared to any other platform. But I get lower engagement than any of the other platforms, because there's no real value to that big number. But it's a little bit of me, if I'm honest, that is going, oh, I don't want to let go of the big number, you know, which is sad. Really.
Well, I don't have anything like that. I don't post on it. I don't do anything on it. So all it does is make me cross.
Yeah.
Though, well, what you said there about the two different platforms and that it should last longer has triggered something in me that we were talking about earlier, not you and I, Headscape people.
Oh, yeah.
And we've had a couple of actually instances of really old websites popping up again, and like they finally can't work on the latest software or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And one of them is, you might remember it, a website about an old, really old book called The Great Parchment Book. It's a kind of museum piece, basically. Yeah. Well, it is a museum piece. The book, it was burnt and got, you know, flood damage and all this kind of thing in it. And very clever people managed to kind of work out, managed to digitize it effectively. And we built a site, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 years ago. Really quite a nice site, quite complicated, lots and lots of interlinking between the pages. Mm. So not something you can easily just go, well, let's just do a flat version of it, because... We were talking about that as well. But what the only thing that kind of comes to mind, and I can remember Jeremy Keith talking about this a long time ago, and me going, blimey, Jeremy gets het up about all sorts of things. But now it's a case of, this is a really nice website that has, that audience still is the same as it ever was. People, it's for learning, you know, mostly an educational academic site that basically... There is no more money to update it, so it's just going to die.
Yeah.
And that's bad.
It is bad.
So therefore, our conversation today was, we should be thinking that about that a bit more, maybe at the point. Obviously, it's too late for that one. Maybe not too late. We might be able to work something out with them, with the museum about this particular site. But it's something that's not considered enough at the point of building a site. Like, what happens in 20 years when this thing is still considered useful from a content perspective, but there is no money to support it? Yeah. Well, I guess you've got the Wayback Machine, I suppose.
I mean, there's always going to be some costs associated with a website, no matter how well you design it, because you've always got to host it and you've always got to have a domain name pointed at it, and all those things cost money. But it is true, when you select a technology, you know, if the trouble is, as soon as you've got any kind of database or back end to it, there's always going to be the need for security updates and that kind of stuff. It's a very hard problem to solve, short of having a flat HTML website.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the only one. That's the only thing that will just sit there and just be it. There will be a very small hosting cost to that. But converting this site will be a big job. But that's probably what we're hoping to persuade them to let us do, just to sort of do a flat version of it. It won't be as good, but at least it'll still be there.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a couple of apps this week, and my choice of apps is not Blue Sky, even though I've already gone on about it. But I just wanted to mention that, really, so that people could follow me on Blue Sky if they wanted to. Which, unsurprisingly, it's called Boag World. What account name do I ever go with other than that? But in terms of apps, the two apps that grabbed my attention this week. The first is called Pathway. And Pathway is one of these typical, there's so many of them. And who thinks I'm going to build an app like this? Because it must be such a competitive market. But it's basically a user research and testing platform, right? So it does card sorting, prototype testing, surveying, 5-second tests, all of that kind of stuff. It just blows my mind that anybody would decide to launch one of these today. I mean, for all I know, this one might have been around for ages. But the only reason I'm mentioning it is because it's got quite a generous free tier. So if you are looking for a place to run this kind of testing and you've got zero budget, you might want to check out Pathway, because it allows you to run 3 projects simultaneously, which isn't bad. You know, if you're a freelancer or you're in-house, you are very unlikely to want to be running more than 3 projects. And it allows you to get up to 250 responses to your survey or your testing or whatever every month, which I think is a pretty good deal. So you might want to check those out if you don't want to spend any money on one of these things. I'm yet to find one that's entirely free, but, you know.
That's the kind of thing we use, but there's always something wrong with them. there's always something annoying about these things, but it's fine, you know.
I think that's why there's so many of them. Because basically, you know, all these agencies out there go, oh, there's something annoying about it. So they do their own unique take on it, you know.
Yeah, PM software's the same, you know.
Yeah.
There's always something about project management software or task software, you know, task management that just drives you up the wall. Anyway, move on.
Yeah. So the second one I got is Baymard Institute. I don't know whether you're familiar with Baymard Institute.
I've heard of them, yes.
Yeah. So basically, they have a massive repository of best practice around UX, and every piece of best practice that they have is built around data. So it's all very research orientated. And it's something that I've always wanted to get my hands on, but I'm always too tight to pay for. but what they have, if there's a reoccurring theme today, isn't there, of me being tight and not wanting to pay for stuff. But what they have released this week at time of recording is a Figma plugin that is absolutely free. And it's just brilliant. So imagine you've got like a landing page or whatever, it doesn't matter, some design in Figma. And you can say it's got a carousel at the top, right? And you've been forced to put in the carousel by the client and you're grumpy about it. So what you could do is you can bring up this Figma plugin. You could type in carousel and it'll bring back a little card that appears on your Figma file next to your design saying why carousels are shit. Right? Or you could equally, obviously, probably more often do it the other way around, that you've taken a particular design approach where perhaps there's a lot of negative space and you're worried that the client is going to want to fill it up, as they like to do. Bring up the card about why, you know, negative space, add that in. You've got a good little argument with real data behind it about why that's there, all built straight into Figma. It's brilliant. I love it. Lovely little thing that's worth using. So next time you've got to justify a design to a client, Marcus, that's the way to go.
Well, what is interesting here, and obviously we'll get to this bit later, but I've been going through here thinking, I was trying to remember two apps that you've recommended on previous shows earlier this week and had to go back into the notes and, oh, it's that one. Yeah, right, okay, because somebody was asking me, so I can't remember what they were. So I need to do myself a long list of apps. Yeah. That you've covered on the show.
Oh, and we got a very long list today.
There's a list of them at the end of this show. Anyway, so that's good. But I need to have a little library of them. I think that's a really good thing. I think, I mean, maybe you could put them on your site, Paul, even as a repository of apps.
I could start a repository of apps. That is true. But you could also buy my agency playbook, Marcus, which has got a repository of apps built into it.
Okay, and is it updated?
No, not very often. That's not really what it's about. It's not designed for that. I just threw in a few to get people, you know, to give them an idea. The idea is that that's a section of your playbook where you put the apps you use. But I was just trying to get money out of you, but that's not going to happen, is it? So.
I'll give you a pound, Phil. All
right, Phil. I'm now Phil. I'm happy to answer to Phil.
I called Chris Paul earlier as well. Oh, I'm not. Dear. I don't come very well at the moment. I think I'm slightly under the weather.
Senility is finally setting in. That's what it is. Yeah, so talking of apps, that's what I want to talk about in today's show, which is an article I wrote on Smashing Magazine. So these are all available in an article that I wrote on Smashing Magazine. And I'll include a link in the show notes as well to all of these. And the show notes will be at boag.world/011. Yes, that's right. That's what. Oh, no. Are we 10 or 11?
We're 10. 10. No, this is number 10.
I can't even count. So that's boag.world/010. So basically, Smashing asked me, because they know that I get a little bit obsessed with every app that is around, and I seem to know about every cool new thing app wise so they asked me to put together a list of AI apps that boost your productivity as a kind of working in UX, or whether you're a designer or a developer or whatever. So I whacked together a little list, and I thought I'd share some of them with you, see if any of them excite you. Not you, Marcus, because you're Mr. Cynical and old and too old to learn new tricks. So I wouldn't expect you to use any.
I'm an old dog.
Exactly. But we've got, so I broke it into categories of design, coding, UX, copywriting and admin. So out of those, I would have thought the only ones that might appeal to you are the copywriting and admin ones. But
I recommend them to other people.
Okay, right.
Within Headscape.
Okay.
So it's all very helpful to have this nice long list, Paul. What I could do with is a long list. Oh, there it is.
There it is, yeah. So from a design point of view, right, if you mainly do user interface design, obviously the big elephants in the room are Figma, which has put a load of AI stuff in it. Now, there's been a bit of a reaction to that. There's a lot of people not happy that Figma are using our design work to train an AI model to replace us. But actually, I don't think that's never going to happen. That's not the thing. But what it does have built into it, which is very nice, is just things like it can rename layers for you, so when you pass it on to somebody else, your document makes sense, or when you get a shitty Figma file from someone else, you can work out what's going on. It can auto create auto layout layers for you, which is very useful as well. But it also can pre-populate content, so Let's say, for example, you've got a thumbnail image, a title, a brief description, and you want to, for an article, and then you want to have a whole list of them down the page. Now you can just drag it out and it goes, you're looking for multiple of these, and it fills them all in and stuff. So it's got some really practical kind of quality of life stuff built in there, not just the, we can create a whole new design from scratch, which it'll have a go at, but is appallingly bad. So I wouldn't be too worried about that. And Adobe are going down a very similar route as well. A lot of their stuff isn't quite out yet. Well, they've got some stuff that you might already have heard about, things like generative fill, etc. But they did a big conference this year called Adobe Max. And I'll put a link to the summary of that conference. But they had announced loads of very, very cool features. For example, they had in Adobe Illustrator a picture of a knight fighting a dragon, except the knight wasn't facing in the right direction. And so instead of having to redraw the knight to fight the dragon, they literally just rotated this 2D image. And it redrew it to be facing the right direction, which was incredible. And they had a whole load of stuff. This is a very long list, so I won't spend too long going through it all. But check it out if you're even if you're someone that's gone, I've got rid of Adobe these days, and I use other software. They're doing some good stuff. I've got to give credit where it's due. With AI, they're doing some very clever stuff. Then there's Reloom, which you might or might not have heard of. And Reloom is basically really good for wireframing. You can basically create an outline for a particular website, just a series of blocks, because really that's what a website is. You know, it's a series of sections, isn't it? So you go through, you create your different sections, you tell it what the website is about, and then it will wireframe up an initial go at it. Right. It's not, you know, it will then go on and do a full design. But again, it's pretty shit. But if you need to get something to impress clients with quickly, then Reloom is a good way of kind of getting a wireframe up and running really quick.
So what do these things cost, Paul? I know they'll all be different, but
yeah. So, I mean, Adobe these days is, you know, if you're just using something like Adobe Photoshop, I think it's about £10 a month. Figma is about £18 a month. I'm pulling this all out of my arse now, so please don't correct me on that. Reloom that I was talking about is $18 as a starter, but it very, you know what these things are like, they all have got different packages, so they all charge different amounts depending on what package you go with, etc.
It's not crazy money.
No, not. Well, it becomes crazy when you subscribe to 300,000 of them, as I do.
that's where I was going with this. Like, how do you afford all of this?
Well, Figma,
you're famous, aren't you? They give it all to you.
Yeah, no, they don't. No. Those days are long gone. Bloody hell. I know, it's sad. I miss those days. The final one, this one I do pay for. I don't pay for Reloom. I do pay for Adobe Photoshop. That's the only one I use these days. I do pay for Figma. The final one is Cree for design. And this is the tool that I use for create generative AI imagery. And I've talked about it before on the show. So that's really good. That's about $10 a month, I think. So that's all the kind of designy ones that, yep. I mean, this isn't a complete list by any means. There are so many, but those are the ones I'm aware of and that I'm kind of using, you know, I think are worth your attention. Coding side of things, obviously I don't do a huge amount of coding anymore, but there are certainly some worth checking out. The two are Cursor AI and GitHub Copilot. Both of them are really good for helping you kind of bug check your code. It's good for getting you started. It's good if you need help for remembering syntax of stuff like that. You can basically have a natural conversation with code. It's great for picking up other people's code and working out what the hell's going on. So really a pretty indispensable with coding now. And in actual fact, you know, there has been some research into this, and the amount of people using AI to help them write code is pretty, you know, pretty large now. They reckon that AI writes about 25% of all the code at Google, and that people, according to a McKinsey study, people who are using AI to help them with their coding tends to be 20 to 50% faster compared to not using AI tools. So it really does make quite a difference in terms of, you know, the amount and speed at which you can code. So yeah, Cursor AI and GitHub Copilot, both worth checking out. With UX, I mean, again, there's so many I could have included, and I've just included three in the end. I think all three I've mentioned before, but as we're doing a roundup, now's a good time. First one's Microsoft Clarity, which is Microsoft's free alternative to Hotjar. So it can do heat maps, session recordings, give you data and stuff. The reason I include it in this AI list is because now, and recently, they've built Microsoft Copilot, which is their AI thing, into the platform, right? So free of charge, you can ask natural language questions about your data, right? And I so wish Google Analytics would do this, you know, that you can just literally go in and say, you know, tell me how many people visited this page after doing this over here. And, you know, it seems pretty good and pretty reliable. So for me, that is an enormous thumbs up and makes it a really useful tool from a UX perspective.
So I'm assuming you're talking about your own site a lot here. Do you use Microsoft Clarity and Google Analytics, or do you just go, Analytics doesn't do what I want?
For my own site, I think I have Google Analytics still running on it because I extract data from it for SEO purposes and things like that. But I don't use it for kind of understanding user behavior. I'll use Clarity for that. So Google Analytics is just kind of, it's also, Google Analytics is great for like basic things like, I suppose Clarity could do this as well, but basic things like how many people engaged with a certain post or whatever. But I don't use it. It can be incredibly powerful, and I don't use any of that for Boag World. I just hate it as a platform. It's just terribly designed. Second tool is Attention Insight, which I know I have mentioned. And that's like you can upload a screen grab of a page, or you can upload a design to it. And it will use thousands of hours of eye tracking studies and a machine learning algorithm to predict to about a 96% accuracy where people will look on the page. Very, very useful tool for hitting stakeholders around the head with when they insist that the design is wrong. So I love it from that. And then the third app in the UX category is that Strella one that I mentioned. Do you remember that, Marcus? The one that does automated user interviews.
This was the one. One of the ones I had to look up.
Yeah. So really, really interesting. Since then, they've given me a demo of the product and kind of shown me how it works and stuff. And I was a bit, well, I still am very dubious about getting a machine to do the user interview. I think that's kind of limited in its benefit. But what I do like is their data analytical tools from the results of those. I would love just to have that half of the app, which I don't think they'll offer at the moment. So basically, it analyzes all the sessions you did, finds common themes, pulls out those themes, finds quotes for you, creates highlight reels that you can show to people, all of that side of things. And that is bloody amazing. So I'm really tempted now by it, even though I'm not sure I like a machine interviewing people. But anyway, yeah.
All of the things you just said there are great if you could use them on user interviews that you facilitated.
Yes,
that absolutely. That would be superb.
Yeah.
Hit a button and have a highlight reel. How good would that be?
Yeah, absolutely. So I might go back to them.
Going back through video is just a pain in the ass.
Yeah, yeah.
So interesting.
Totally agree with that. Copywriting. Hemingway Editor. I've been pushing Hemingway Editor since the year zero. You know, it's like I've always loved the app. Now it's got a lot of AI tools in there that's brilliant for website copywriting. This is, I'm being very specific, it's website copywriting. You wouldn't want to use Hemingway for anything else. But it is really good for that. And now it'll rewrite stuff and make it more concise and more scannable and all of those things. So cannot recommend that highly enough. I mean, you can do a pretty good job with ChatGPT and Claude if you give it good enough instructions, but Hemingway is particularly good. And I also recommend Notion AI as well, because what I like about Notion AI is that it kind of combines the power of ChatGPT with the knowledge and the context window, they call it, of Claude. So in other words, you can in Notion, you can just throw huge amounts of information. Here's my style guide. Here's an example of a previous thing I've written. Here's some background information. Now go ahead and write my thing, right? And it can cope with all of that information to then craft you some copy that's pretty good. I mean, it's not perfect. Sometimes you have to step it through, you know, first create me an outline. Okay, now I've got the outline, now do this stage of it. And, you know, it needs hand-holding a bit, but it's pretty damn good, to be honest. And all of my content now that I write for websites all has AI touch it in some way, because it's just so invaluable at kind of just sanity checking what you're doing as much as anything. But also for those times when you just go, my brain is not firing today. What's the best way of wording this thing that I have in my head, you know? And then finally, we come to the admin section. So these are no matter what your job is, these might be useful to you. The first one is called FixKey, which I recommended to somebody on Spark only a couple of days ago, who was saying that they were fed up with the spell checker that you get built into your operating system, how it always seems to be a little bit shit and the autocomplete never works properly. So what FixKey does is it will grab your text and it will throw it through it's a keyboard shortcut. So it grabs whatever you've got selected, throws it through an AI large language model and spits it back out better written. But you can also customize your prompts. So for example, I've got ones for write this as a better sales email, make this more clear and concise, improve the writing, don't change anything but fix the grammar, turn this into title case if I happen to need that for a blog title or something. So, and you can create whichever ones you want in there. Could translate this to French if you wanted to, and it'll take whatever you've got and just, you know, redo that. That is worth every penny. I bloody love that app.
And that one costs?
Now, see, I got a bit of a deal on that because I got them when it launched and he did a lifetime deal, which was very cheap at the time. Now it's $48 per year or $7 per month, which $48 a year, I don't think is bad for something that I use. I would have thought at least a dozen times per day. You know, it really is. Almost everything goes through that.
Okay, cool.
Another one is Spark, which is an email client that's got AI built into it. And it will do things like summarize email threads for you. It will also draft replies for you. You can get it to, you can create templates that it will rewrite, sort of use the template as a basis, but customize it for individual conversations, stuff like that. Quite like that. I think I'll be dumping that one soon because Notion is releasing an email client that got me salivating, so I'll probably be getting rid of it. But it does have good AI tools in it. Next one is Google Notebook. This is brilliant. Anytime you want to research a thing in depth. So let's imagine you were working with a new client and they had a particularly complicated offering. You could basically grab their entire website, download it as HTML files if you wanted to, or as a PDF or whatever. You could maybe grab other competitors' sites. You could throw all of it in Google Notebook and then ask it to summarize and explain it all to you. And you can question it and you can have conversations. So you can take enormous amounts of data, throw it into this thing, and it will then explain it to you. Far more than any other large language model can deal with, really. So that's what makes it incredibly powerful. The amount, I think you can put the whole of War and Peace and the Harry Potter books and Lord of the Rings combined into it, or something like that. I've just pulled that out of my ass, but it's something ridiculous like that. And that one's free, Marcus. So you would like that one. Wow. Free, yeah. Oh, the other thing it does is it replaces us as well.
Okay. What, does so podcasts?
Yes, and they're scaringly good, right? So it's, you can upload, it's a bit of, is it a gimmick? I know it'd be great if you were a student studying as a way of learning, right? So you can throw in all this data and then you can say, make me a podcast. And it has two people having a conversation about the content that you've put into it. And it creates a podcast and you can download that, listen to it. And it's scary. We're redundant now, Marcus.
No, I bet it wouldn't be like us.
No, is it? No, it's definitely
better
not.
That.
Yeah,
more
I was going to say.
More professional.
Absolutely. Then there's just two more. We're nearly done. Then there's Perplexity, which is a large language model with a good search facility. So I use this all the time when you know, Marcus, I'm sure you've never noticed this about me in all the years we've worked together. But I do seem to make sweeping generalizations.
You do. Yes, you do.
So
very confidently as well.
Very confidently.
And that's
right?
The secret to success, kids.
Trouble is, it is. That is terrible. But then every now and again, somebody calls bullshit on me, which is understandable, and they want some source backing it up. And obviously, when I write, you know, business cases and stuff like that, I need to justify my sweeping generalizations. So Perplexity is my go-to. I will literally type into it, this is the opinion I've pulled out of my ass. Find me some evidence to back it up. And it does. It'll go away and it'll find reports or whatever. Obviously, it can't if you're
BoeAgWill.com/...
Do you know what? It is yet to reference me. So, yeah. No, it's really useful for that. So I highly recommend it for that purposes as well.
Cool.
And then the final one I wanted to mention is Flow. And Flow isn't a period tracking app, but is actually a app that kind of allows you to dictate. And okay. So it takes your audio. But it's not like, you know, I've been using, we've talked about this on the show as well, haven't we? I've been using Dragon Dictate stuff for years. But this will actually, doesn't just dictate what you said, it will tidy it up. So if you go, yeah, let's arrange a meeting for tomorrow. Oh, no, I mean Friday. It'll just put Friday in, right? So, it's pretty powerful. And I basically type very little these days because, as we all know, I'm very good at talking. And not so good at writing. So there you go. There's a whole load of apps to keep people busy.
That's very good, Paul. Thank you. You've created the list for me.
There you go. I mean, there are more. I could go on, but
no doubt.
I think that will do for now.
Stop there. Stop.
This podcast is long enough anyway. I was trying to draw it out so that I wouldn't have to do this next section. Which is that I finally had to admit that SEO is actually pretty good. So yeah, this is Paul Edwards' fault. Paul Edwards is somebody in our Slack channel. By the way, guys, you're completely welcome to join our Slack channel if you ever want to. It's boagworld.com/slacking. And Paul is just amazing guy who has been incredibly supportive to me and to the channel as well. And he told me off, basically, by I was going, SEO, I'm not sure whether I really believe in it. And, you know, it seems like a lot of work and I've never got around to doing anything on my own website. Moan, moan, moan. And I've always been very cynical about it. And in fact, years back, I managed to piss off the whole SEO community with an article I wrote on Smashing Magazine. I'll put a link into the... into the show notes just for shits and giggles to that. But, you know, things are different now. But anyway, Paul said, you know, you've got such good domain authority because your website's been around for so many years. You really should put some effort into this. So he's been teaching me to actually get my head around SEO properly. And it's so different to what it was, Marcus, because SEO used to be this horrible nightmare, didn't it? Of like the amount of time we spent arguing with SEO people because we didn't want to keyword stuff pages and, you know, and or they wanted to mess around with, you know, putting keywords into headings where it made no sense for them to be there and all this bullshit. But it's yep. grown up a lot. The algorithm, I think, obviously has progressed and is smarter now. So it kind of it doesn't require all of that. And SEO and everybody else, there'll be people listening to this going, Paul, you are so far behind. We know this. This is ridiculous.
What have you been doing then? So what's Paul E and Paul B been doing on Berg World then?
Yeah, so a lot of it is there's kind of two sides of it. There's the technical side of it and the content side of it. So the technical side of it is, you know, all sensible stuff that would be is great from a user perspective as well, like making sure your heading for a page is actually an H1 and not an H2 and all of that kind of thing, which is great if you're a screen reader user, and make sure your links are not broken or, you know, that they're not redirecting endlessly so that the page takes forever to load, and, you know, all those kinds of technical things that increasing site performance and speed, you know, all yeah. of that kind of stuff, which, to be fair, has always been something SEO has done and has always been a good thing. It's never been a problem from a technical point of view. It was a problem from a content point of view, but if anything now, it's forcing you to be more user-centric than maybe you were. So by way of example, I kind of have to, you know, if I'm writing a blog post now, I'll take the time to find out what phrasing people would use to search on it, right? So, you know, I might be writing an article about how to find web design clients, let's say, right?
Yep.
But actually, most people are searching how to win web design clients. So it makes sense that I use that word in it rather than find, right? So your language is evolving to become more user-centric and more in line with people. But also, it encourages you to go and look at related, you know, the questions that people might ask on Google around that subject, related phrases, right? And that means that as you write the content, now you're answering real user questions here, right? Mm. You know, and that's obviously hugely beneficial to users. So it's actually a really good backdoor for getting clients and stakeholders to care about user experience, because you can say, well, if we make it SEO friendly, it will also be, you know, more friendly for the user as well. And people tend to care more about their search engine rankings than they do about the user. But these days, the two are almost synonymous with one another, which is great, you know? So
that's cool. But all of that just sounds like, maybe this is a little bit too sort of dumbing it down, but common sense?
It is.
I mean, or doing your research properly. And if you're, you know, if you're creating something, that you're ensuring the thing you create is as focused on the user's requirements as it should be. We've been saying that for years, decades.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I think, and you're entirely right, but there's always a difference. It's like, I know I should lose weight, Marcus, but yeah, but there's a big yes. difference between knowing something and doing something. But if you've yeah. got a strong motivator to do that thing, like, for example, I want to be number one on Google, you're more likely to put the effort in to do all of that research. And that's, I think, what I've missed, because my attitude has been exactly the same as yours, right? That, oh, this is all common sense. And to some extent, it is all common sense, but it's also a very useful motivator. And there is one other aspect to it, which I really liked, which is that within SEO, they also make, they focus a lot on the user journey, right? Which I think clients are pretty shit at doing. So it kind of divvies up keywords based on where you are in the journey. So there's informational keywords. I just want information on the subject. There's navigational keywords. I want to find something on the subject. There's comparative keywords that are about you, me comparing you with someone else. And then there are transactional keywords where I'm ready to buy. And all of these fit into different stages in the journey, in the funnel. And it's a really great way to get the client and stakeholders focusing on their language and their positioning and where people are in the journey and what users want to know at the time. So that's what I got excited about, really.
And I guess I'm thinking about this particularly about your site, but on a very commercial site, the owner of a commercial site is interested in bucks, you know, how much money we can make. And they're not necessarily, they probably are, but they're not that comparatively interested in how their users are feeling or what their users' requirements are.
Exactly.
But if you make the two things, you know, one leads to the other, then everyone's happy. Yeah. Win-win.
Yeah. Exactly. So, cool. I don't know, it's funny, isn't it, when you come back to a subject, it's not that it was massively different to what I knew before and nothing that I believed was fundamentally wrong because I kind of knew that SEO had moved on anyway. But it was just a bit of a light bulb moment for me personally to realise actually there is value for the user experience in SEO work. So that's where I came from. Yeah, so that's about it for this show. I mean, I know the AI list of AI tools felt like a bit of a random kind of long list of things, but I think there what I was wanted to get at is that it's very easy to feel overwhelmed by all of these tools and to think, okay, you know, I've got to pick up these things and I've got to learn this new stuff. But I think the message that I wanted to leave with people is, look, there is so many cool tools out there, and there, if you're not using them, your competitors are going to be using them and you are going to begin to get left behind. And that I think there's almost a tool for everything you can possibly imagine. That AI can help in so many different areas. And so we need to cultivate this new habit of not just basically of pausing before we complete each task to consider, is there an AI tool that can help me do this quicker and better? Because I think it's so easy just to do things the way you've always done them. And that actually at the moment, there's such a big shift going on that actually there are new and better ways to do stuff. But anyway, I should have probably said that at the end of the AI section rather than at the end of the SEO section.
Well, actually, Paul, it was perfect because I've integrated AI into my workflow.
Have you done a joke, an AI joke?
I asked it for the best joke ever. I asked ChatGPT to tell me the best joke ever. Are you ready?
This is going to be horrible, isn't it? It's really bad at humour, but go for it.
Why don't skeletons fight each other?
Why don't skeletons fight each other?
Because they don't have the guts.
Actually, I do quite like that. That's not bad, is it?
It's not bad.
I'll give it not bad.
But yes, it's certainly not the best joke ever. I was expecting something. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to get off the floor for 10 minutes, but no.
But really, it's not about the writing of it, is it? It's the delivery of it. And you ruin everything with your delivery, Marcus. Right. And on that, best joke ever. Well, I might have to call this show the best joke ever. And on that, we shall end. Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Bye.